What is going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode, Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. First, go follow me at, wait a second. Oh, never mind. Whoa, just ignore that. Go follow me at Kojak Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. You want to support the show. I have a Venmo and a Patreon. We got an English subscriber recently. It says £5. So I wonder, because I think the pound is worth a little more than the dollar. Maybe it'll be like $6 or something crazy. But so thank you for that. And then if you're not following me, go follow me as well. I think that's it. All right. That's it. Yeah. So happy Friday. We made it. Weekend is here. Phil, thanks for stopping, dude. I don't think it's going to be too crowded of a night. So Phil, whenever you got to go, buddy, you head out. All right. I know you're a busy guy reading and you did give me that good info though. I now already forget, but another connection at the Washington Post with the CIA. Jeremy, dude, what's going on, man? I always say this, but we need to talk again, dude. So I'm going to try and write myself a mental note to reach out to you. But last episode, we'll just get right into it. We started the book Catherine the Great and the Washington Post Empire. And last episode was kind of an overview of more of her father and just his ties. Basically, to recap, her father was an international banker. He would eventually become a director of the World Bank. He was on the Federal Reserve Board. He was a stock trader. He was an international banker. And the book writes him though as this like, oh, Wall Street hated him. He was outcasted because he was just such an honest, good banker. Right. And we know, obviously, whoever wrote this book, it was some lady wrote the book, probably buddies with Catherine Graham at the time, Catherine Meyer Graham. But he bought the Washington Post in 1933 during the Depression. I think something like $80,000. I didn't look at the time. The Washington Post was not the paper that the CIA built it to be. So it was there was a bigger paper in DC at the time. But yeah, so he bought it. And in the Depression, he eventually would give it to Philip Graham, who is Catherine's husband. And basically, yeah, so that's all we got to. Catherine, what we talked about, which I thought was which is important to know, is the Washington Post was built on Watergate. So it was that story. They broke it. The honest, courageous journalism of Watergate, which all of us know to be dubious. Phil knows better than anybody. He came on the show to talk about Watergate. So he would be best. You can go check that out, that episode, to find out more about Watergate. But she hated Nixon. Hated Nixon, just like everybody. He's like got that the Donald Trump-esque relationship with the media. He hated the press, but she was best friends with Henry Kissinger. So is this lady have a good moral compass? No, not at all. Like, you can't be friends with Kissinger, but hate Nixon. Oh, Kissinger, like she would go to the movies with this guy every time he was in DC. I'm sure they did not talk at all about Mockingbird Media. I'm sure it was just, you know, good, honest journalism or whatever, right? And then lastly, the big thing that we touched on was that her father, Eugene Meyer, he was a big Zionist. We'll probably get into this episode, but he was sending tons of money, tons of guns, money to buy guns to the colony in Palestine, because obviously that was just starting then. So you see why the paper was already started with the same things that make up the CIA, you know, their banking, espionage, Zionism. This built the CIA. So you can see this paper, it was perfect. It was the perfect paper for the CIA to do Operation Mockingbird with, right? And we can see that continue today. It is, I mean, Jeff Bezos owns it now. I'm sure he has very little input. But and also the reason why it is so woke. Oh, we'll just get into that today. So we didn't really get into Catherine Meyer's background last episode, but she was born in 1917. She's dead now, but I don't know, the photo of her on the book, it doesn't look like that old of a book. So it's like, oh my God, 1917. Holy crap. But she grew up extremely wealthy, obviously. I mean, her dad owns, like, during the Depression, when one fourth out of every a man was unemployed, her dad owned $48 million in stock in, was it Dow Chemical? It was one of the chemicals. I don't think it was Dow though. It was another, I can't, not DuPont, not Dow, but another like Chemical Bank. I don't know. He owned a bunch of shares in that. They were making like biological weapons. So again, it's just the perfect paper for the CIA to take over because it was basically a CIA operation already. Allied. Yeah, I think you're right, Phil. See, Phil, you got like a photographic memory. I think you're right, Allied. But as an infant, as Catherine was an infant, he was director of the War Finance Corporation. What was the War Finance Corporation? Oh, well, that would decide which companies during World War I would get subsidized for war productions and what products they would buy and at what cost. Ooh, Pressy, if it sounds staticky, let me do this. One sec. Let me do this.
All right. Hopefully that sounds better, Pressy. I forget to unplug it and plug it in. So hopefully that sounds, let me know if it sounds better. But yeah, so her father was a part of the War Finance Commission, which picked which businesses would get government subsidies to make weapons to kill people. Oh, thank you, God. Good. I'm glad it sounds better. But isn't that, like, again, this is the family that bought the Washington Post. It just all makes sense in my, you know, I'm sure there's zero corruption, zero pay to play, zero kickbacks involved in this, right? I'm sure it's just totally honest. He's just trying to get the best gun and the best cotton to send over to Europe to send our men to die. And he was a big proponent of World War I. He was and the Grahams were huge in World War II. And we're going to get into that in a second as well. But this book basically mentions that he was against, that's what the book says. Is it true? I don't know. But they say that Eugene Meyer was heavily against the fines put on Germany and after World War I because he was so smart. He knew what was going to happen if you did that. Do I believe that? No, I don't believe that at all. But he would remain director of the War Finance Commission until 1925. And the war obviously ended much earlier than 1925, but people can't stop making money, right? This already, the military industrial complex is beginning in World War I. I remember reading this in this George Bush family book. Prescott Bush, obviously, he helped finance the Nazis with Brown Brothers Harriman. He was on trial for trading with the enemy. Or no, maybe he never got on trial. But his father was on trial during the time that he's financing Hitler because his dad owned a steel company that was making rifles. And they were sending 70, they provide his company, the Bush family's, not Prescott, the one above that, older than that, his father, 70% of the rifles used in World War I were built by him. 70%? Wait, what is that? How does that work? Yeah, because he was sending it to both sides, the Allies and the German side. So that's, again, literally at the same time that Prescott Bush is sending money over to Hitler to finance the war machine, his dad's on trial for Trading with the Enemies Act. Of course, he doesn't get prosecuted because no one ever does, right? It already started in World War I. It already started back in the early 1920s. But yeah, and I don't know much about Calvin Coolidge. Phil, I bet, does. Maybe Pressy does too. But Calvin Coolidge, I've like looked him up briefly. I remember someone at work, we like brought him up for some reason. And he sounded like a pretty like our kind of president. He would disband the War Finance Commission. And I believe he would shot down the League of Nations too. I'm pretty sure. Phil might be able to add into that if I'm wrong on that information. But I'm pretty sure Calvin Coolidge was like a decent president. Probably why I know nothing about him. That's usually how it works, right? If they're a good president, you know nothing. Or they're a racist or they're evil. If they're a bad president, They Silent Cal. Is that his nickname? That's hilarious. And I'm glad it sounds better. Phew. I would hate that if I listened to it later and it was just staticky. And so after the war finance, Meyer would go on to administer loans for the Farm Loan Board until 1929. And then he would go full steam into investment banking. And Catherine and her siblings, again, super rich. It's just funny. Like the People's Paper, the left-leaning paper, it was owned by a billionaire of our time, a millionaire of, you know, a millionaire is not so significant anymore, but then it was significant and they were, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars they owned. So she would have lovely winters in Washington and summers on her farm in New York. Both places are filled with priceless artworks, paintings, chandeliers. They would have like 10 maids, 14 maids and butlers at each of the locations. Their New York home had dressing rooms, not bedrooms, dressing rooms for each of the four or five children. Tennis courts. I hear my dog making a noise. All right. 30,000 gallon swimming pool tank, stables for horses. The New York estate would get visits from all powerful people, Eleanor Roosevelt, everybody, a who's who of the 1920s, 1910s was at the Meyer farm. And Eugene would have his children participate in dinner political debates, make them state their opinion and argue against each other. You know, or if you don't know, I'm expecting a child in November. And I like that idea, though. I think RFK said that his father made him do that as well. So pretty, you know, I'm not a good debater at all. I'm horrible. I'm so bad. I can't think quickly. And I think some of it is genetics, like your ability to articulate and talk. Even like podcasts, I without my notes, I don't have the recall ability of like Phil to just pull out names. But so I like that idea. So I don't knock him for that. It's good. But the New York estate. Oh, just said that. And so she would eventually attend this all girls school, same one as her siblings. But the depression hit at that time and the school had no money and they were broke. And the Myers would actually, they owned several hundred acres of property on the Potomac River in northern Virginia. They would donate to the school and that would become their new home. So I'm sure they didn't treat Catherine any differently after that event. And she would graduate eventually, attend Vassar College. And Vassar had been, this makes so much sense why the Washington Post is the way it is, because this is who built it. But she would attend Vassar College, which was like a radical idea at the time when it was built in 1865 by Matthew Vassar. It was to promote the cause of women's education. And basically everyone that worked there, the faculty, the students, devoted their lives to feminism. And at the time, there were some valuable, some legitimate causes to fight for feminism, right? Like my aunts on my dad's side, my grandfather said that women don't go to college. So they like held that against, you know, he's long gone, but they held that against them, right? That they weren't allowed, women weren't supposed to go to school. So I don't agree, you know, with that level of, I think people should be able to choose, women should be, if they want to go to college to become a doctor or nurse, they should absolutely be able to do that. But regardless, it grew out of this, you know, whether manipulation or it left legitimate causes, maybe because none were left. And they find these made up ones that they have today that have utterly destroyed society, family, the nuclear family. And Catherine would start this liberal club at Vassar College, which was basically socialistic leanings. She claimed the club was to, quote unquote, stop emotional women from supporting communism. I have no comment. Anyway, so her club would grow to become a powerful national movement, taking Catherine to Ohio for this convention. It was called the American Student Union, which was created to coordinate progressive activities on the major American campuses. And she joined the board at the same time her father had bought a small paper for very cheap, the Washington, in 1933. But first he had to resign from the Federal Reserve Board. Gosh darn it, gotta get that out of the way. You know, a paper for the people. Sure, my dad's on the Federal Reserve Board that's putting everyone in debt slavery. Paper for the people. And Meyer was also tapped to help write legislation to loan out $2 billion to banks affected by the Depression. And I'm sure Meyer, being the great person that he was, this people power family, courageous family, I'm sure he didn't give it to any of the local small banks. I imagine he gave it to probably like the same ones that got bailed out in 2008, right? People that were on the Wall Street, people that were also had connections to international banking, to Zionism, I believe said the business of America is business. Ooh, I like that. Calvin Coolidge. He might be my next book to read about Calvin Coolidge. I think I posted, I'm reading right now about Prussia and its corporate welfare. Exactly. It's an awesome book though. I love European history. So it's like, I like try to imagine myself. The 30-year war, I already read a book on that, but it's just like so fascinating. This battle between Protestants and Catholics. And I was raised Presbyterian though. I like reading the Catholic Church is such an amazing history. My wife was raised Catholic. Obviously most Koreans are Presbyterian, but I think maybe I'm just saying that because of Reverend Sun Moon or whatever. But so I don't know where we'll send our child to school, but yeah. Anyway, so what were we talking about? Okay. She was worried people would become communist. So eventually Catherine would join the Washington Post as a regular on the editorial staff. She would write this huge article in 1936, her first big editorial. It was written about the relationship between media and politics. And listen to this story. This book has like, it's a good read. There's like all these awesome stories in it that the author doesn't know that the conspiracy people like me are like, oh my, you, of course it is. Of course it's this way, right? But here, so at the time when she wrote this article about the media and politics, foreshadowing what was going to happen or what her paper would become in 30 years, Sinclair Lewis, the Jungle, I think that's what he's most famous for, the author, he wrote this book, It Can't Happen Here. And it was censored by Hollywood to control reactions. Silenced by what the Washington Post and Catherine would call, quote unquote, dictators. People like Williams, Hayes, and Hearst, they were being dictators by keeping communistic ideas out of Hollywood. What a stark comparison to today. And I remember the Catholic League, they were powerful. I mean, what the list was called, you know, the Red List or whatever. I mean, they were coming after communists in Hollywood for a long time. They look what happens when, oh, they're dictators. Oh, they're so evil. Oh my God, freedom of speech. And now it's gone so far the other way. Only thing that's in the movies is communistic, feministic, these woke ideas that are, you know, Marxist where they originate from. And so now you have the alternative where it's just funny. Like, I guess it's just a pendulum or I don't know. That's the way it's working with this. But so you see people scoff at these groups trying to watch, you know, I remember Eminem being taken to court for his lyrics. And at the time as a kid, you know, you're like, oh, you know, yeah, Eminem fighting the powers that be, these evil, like, you know, uppity church people. But now I see why, dude. And these people knew what was going to happen, and they were so right. They were so right. So, you know, at the time, I would most likely say, like, oh, I believe you should be able to put out whatever you want as long as, you know, it's free speech. And now I don't know. I don't know where I fall because I see what happens. So if you give people this room to become just animalistic degenerates, they take it, dude. They take it. So do you help stop that? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But regardless, this happened with Sinclair Lewis's book. And so Lewis's book talked about how we have fascism in America because of the censorship. So even back then, the Democrats were big on fascism, big on being fascist. I'm sure they used that word just as much frequently as they use it today. Now they just swapped it with Nazis. So, but isn't that hilarious that, okay, and the story gets better. So the quote was, I made the anti-fascist leader of the book a Republican supported by support. I made the anti-fascist leader in the book Republican. And if Mr. Hayes thinks an anti-fascist feeling can be interpreted as anti-Republican, that should interest a lot of Republicans. So even in 1936, what's going on, manufacturing reality? What's going on, dude? Thanks for coming. So nice of you on a Friday. But so Sinclair Lewis wrote this book that was communistic. I've never read it. I'm sure it was. It was probably woke for 1936. And he was quoted saying how, oh, of course the Republicans hate this, want to censor this book. They think because I made the leader Republican, they're worried it's going to look bad on them. Well, maybe they should think about that. And it's just like, what? dude, it nothing changes at all, right? Like nothing, nothing. Basically, Sinclair Lewis was calling Mr. Hayes Hitler because he said he didn't want America to see the horrors of fascism that America is living with. Right? In 19, you know, oh, this evil country. It's just, I don't need to explain. You understand what the point is, that it just nothing changes. And it's hilarious because nobody knows, because nobody does anything but watch sports and celebrities and pornography. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Damn, Phil. That's beautiful. I know that quote, but it's beautiful. That's exactly it, dude. Here's another nice quote. When they tire of this, they go in for frank assaults on behalf of the right-wing Hollywood, as in a red salute. A Hollywood picture with genuine left-wing tendency is obviously impossible. How much things have changed, and yet they stay the same. So again, Sinclair Lewis in this quote is saying that Hollywood could never get, you're never going to find a communistic or a free speech movie in Hollywood because you can't get it done. You can't get it done. And I wish I had the movies then, because today the movies suck. I like Indiana Jones. I can't watch it. I just saw the clip where it was like his god or his granddaughter or whatever said, he like says like, I fought Nazis, you know? And then she says, you also stole indigenous land from indigenous people. Dude, they beat down so hard on white people. They're shocked by people. I think it's probably on purpose to push people to the extreme, because what do you expect people to do? Right-wing Hollywood, Mel. What's up, skeptic? That's hilarious, Mel Gibson. But isn't that crazy, though? Like, I think it's probably on purpose to push people in to be radicalized, to cause more, because you can't, what else would you expect to happen? If you just bash on white people constantly, anything that we hold of value, people that, even characters and movies and TV shows that we have value in, or we, you know, we built our childhood on this and all these things, they want to smash that down. And so when you smash that down, what do you expect people to do? They're not going to say, you have half of them that say, you're right, that is racist. Mostly weak people that want to be with the loud group. And then you have the other side where now, if anything, you're pushing them to become more racist, right? I mean, like, they're going to start saying things and believing things that are half truths, but and it's easy to like get caught up in that, you know, helter skelter, like Charlie Manson wanted. I think you're right, because it's going that way. You know, like, I see this trend, and you know, some things I'm happy with. I see the rise of like anti-immigration sentiment, or I think the anti-migrant. I saw a phrase the other day about an article I was reading about Turkey. Their president, the new guy trying to become president, is saying no more, we're going to deport all 14 million immigrants or migrants. But anyway, so, and the last quote from Sinclair, the widespread appeal of it can't happen here proves that it is Hollywood, not America, that is evidencing fascistic tendencies. Just, it makes me smile, dude. It makes me smile. Fascism has been on the left's brain for a long, long time. And well, it's hilarious. An alumni from Vassar heard about this and wrote, what is fascism? Oh, and so Vassar, you know, had his alumni association. They saw Catherine's article, because she obviously quoted Sinclair Lewis frequently in the article. And so he wrote, said, quote, what is fascism? This is a crazy answer. So I don't believe this. I'm going to say this first. What is it but Christians' answer to a religion's communist? As for me, the wheel of my country comes first. So I don't know. So even then, you had the two sides. You had the people that said, well, fascism isn't that bad if this is the alternative, right? If we can't vote responsibly and be adults, then I guess we need somebody to tell us what to do. And the American Students Union's platform issues were peace, which we're going to come back to, freedom, security, and equality. So they're about peace, right? Catherine's group, they're about, you know, anti-war and peace and love. They're hippies before the hippies, right? And they were against this thing called the Oxford Pledge. What is the Oxford Pledge? Well, it's an oath that they would promise to never fight in a war. So now, wait, I thought you guys were about peace, but you don't want to take the pledge? Huh. What does this remind me of? The exact same thing that's happening in Ukraine. You know, you're all anti-war, big Barack Obama who drops, you know, 26,000 bombs, run out of bombs for the air. They run out of bombs. He bombs so many people, but he wins the Nobel Peace Prize. Again, nothing changes, dude. It's these, if people like could see this, they would be able to spot these holes in these hypocrisies, but they're so far ingrained, they don't allow themselves to see it. So they were about Social Security. They condemned the persecution of African Americans and other minority groups. And Catherine, so again, you see why the Washington Post is the Washington Post. Catherine was one of the most prominent people on Vassar campus. She was known nationwide. And she would end up leaving Vassar College and transferring to University of Chicago, which was like an intellectual center for radicals in the 1930s. So Catherine had heard her ASU meetings from how Chicago is a hotbed of radical activities. And so that's why she went. And so this is such another good story in the book. So she has two amazing professors. She has this guy who would become a senator, Paul Douglas, very left-leaning, and this guy Hutchins. And Chicago University was known as the Great Experiment when it opened in 1890. It's known for its amazing Gothic architecture, like Tartarian architecture for my Tartarian people. I think that a lot of that architecture actually, maybe some of the buildings came from the Chicago World's Fair, or it was, you know, built around the same time. Yeah, right around this. It was built, it was opened in literally 2 years before the Chicago World's Fair, I think. I think it was 1892. 1893. I got my little Chicago World's Fair memorabilia thing behind me, so I had to check. And it's also, if there's a fellow student there who was a Nazi spy that attended the school, one dorm was filled with war refugees. And like this Nazi guy had a Nazi flag and pictures on the window. So again, this is 1936, you know, so it was just fun. Interesting to me, like you could have a Nazi flag in 1936 and you wouldn't immediately end up in jail. So isn't that, I know this was before the war and everything, but I knew that there were supporters of Mustache Man in America, but I don't know. I just found that anecdote interesting. So, and Hutchins, so the other professor, he's a much more right-leaning, the only Gothic architects I appreciate is Goth IHOP. Love it. Love it, Phil. But Hutchins was a more right-leaning professor, and as opposed to the rest of the staff, which were a bunch of New Dealers. So Chicago University is a good, again, foreshadowing of what the academia would turn into. My pop-up was a big-time professor at Lehigh University. You know, it's a very prestigious school. And my whole family's like teachers. He fought in World War II. I guarantee, you know, he would not be a Democrat today. For I don't even know if he was then. I have no idea. I never got to ask him that. But, you know, just it was funny that this woke college, again, it's setting up what's going to happen everywhere. And so the ASU, the American Student Union, would organize a protest, but more militant than the group at Vassar on social and political reform. So this I House, that was what it was called, not to be confused with Skeptic. Sorry, I wasn't reading Skeptic, but not to be confused with IHOP, the I House, not the International House of Pancakes, a dorm. Didn't know whether to accept Catherine because of her extremely wealthy background. Basically, they wanted her to pay dues to be part of the group, and that's it. And they would form a group to support the communists in Spain. You know, the group that was burning churches and raping nuns. Those communists in Spain. The power to the people, though, everybody. You know. So again, nothing changes. These same Antifa is the same as the American Student Union of yesterday. You know. They would form an interesting to note about the Spanish Civil War. Tolkien had this quote about the Spanish Civil War, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically, I support the side not murdering nuns and burning churches. And so, you know, I like that because people, you know, people love The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. I'm sure and I think they've even come out and say like things are racist in his book. But yeah, and basically, just as always, these communist groups, they do such gruesome and evil stuff. The Bolshevik Revolution, not that right-leaning fascists don't do evil stuff as well, but very gruesome things that it just is hypocritical between the, you know, we support the workers, we support the people, but we'll also rape and kill nuns. You know, they don't match up very well. And I put basically the French Revolution levels of depravity. French Revolution, cooking people in butter, frying them alive, skinning them, on and on. Again, so I don't know, what is it, the revolution mindset that gets people doing these horrible, horrible things? Or is it that the leaders of these communist left-wing groups are into violence? They have so much pent-up anger, maybe because they're probably low on the hierarchical scale of society. They are mad, you know, they're not the stereotypical jock or whatever, getting this beautiful family and children. And so they take it out on them. I think that's what that's hilarious. Skeptic says that hippies love Tolkien's work. Tolkien did not like the hippies. Dude, that's an awesome skeptic. Do you know, I think it's C.S. Lewis, and he has a quote, and I couldn't find it. I tried to Google it the other day because it's such a good, I have a meme of it, but it's something like, when you don't have a monarchy, people start worshiping celebrities or something like that. I don't know if you've ever seen that quote, Skeptic, but and maybe it's made up. I don't know. I couldn't find it. I kept Googling it. I only gave it like 5 minutes. But even in the 30s, the ASU would have meetings with speakers. They had a speaker, this Chinese speaker, who would talk how evil fascist Japan was. And I just say this because this is why our elites or support China so much. They were already supporting them in 1930s. The communists were, right? Mao's China. No, sure, he killed all these millions and millions of people, but no, it was a good people's revolution. It was a good idea to slaughter all the birds because they were the ones causing pestilence and disease. And then they had a huge bug population that killed all their whatever, crops. And the ASU would institute taking the Oxford Pledge, the pledge that promised no one would fight in a war. But it caused some confusion, though, because just like Ukraine, they didn't know how to stop the abominations from Nazis in Spain, from the evil fascists. And one of their lovely professors who spoke and talked about how he was at the Bolshevik Revolution. Again, I know I keep repeating myself. Listen to this, a professor that spoke at the ASU, Catherine's left-leaning socialistic group. He said he was at the Bolshevik Revolution, but he never felt more terror than the peacetime in the United States. The loonies never change. I mean, this is like exactly like how the trans community will say, we're being hunted down and murdered in the streets. No, you're not. Professor at the bloody, disgusting, horrible Bolshevik Revolution, no, it's not more terror in the United States than during the Bolshevik Revolution, where there was so much blood, it backed up from the sewers and coagulated with a foot of blood in the Tsar's house. So no, it was not, it's not scarier in America, but I'm just saying this again because nothing changes. They still say the most ridiculous crap that people believe, because if it's pumped out in the media enough famous people say stuff to you. I forgot my other light. I knew it looked different in here. I was like, what the heck? Why does it look different? Oh, let me see. Yeah, Skeptic has the quote. All right, here we go, Skeptic. Let me read this. When men are forbidden to honor a king, they honor millionaires, athletes, or film stars. Instead, even famous prostitutes or gangsters. For spiritual nature, like bodily nature, will be served. Denied food, and it will gobble poison. Oh, man, that's a big quote. Damn, dude. If that doesn't get you pumped up, I don't know what will. Thank you, Skeptic. I gotta like print that out and put it on the wall in here. Okay, so that speaker, the crazy person, loonies. And the club even had this guy, the ASU had this guy, George Rady, who was a prominent in the socialist club. Shockingly, he's a socialist. What administration would he work in? Oh, he would be an advisor to LBJ. What did LBJ known for? The Great Society, which utterly destroyed the black community and brought it to the moment that we're in today. So I just bring this up because the left, the Democrats, and I don't want to be red team, blue team guy, but they've always been like this. They've been this socialist group that masquerades as, no, we just want to help people, but they don't. They don't want to help people. And Robert, I stopped in on the show and listened for like 20 minutes, but I didn't think you were speaking. So I eventually had to get ready for this one. But I just wanted you to know, buddy, that I was there on my phone. And then as the brainwashing kept hitting Catherine, she would end up dropping out of the class with the Hutchins professor who she went to the school to begin to. One of the reasons she went to the school, because he did this like big history class, history over the, you know, it was like a world history of history. Okay. And that's why that was one of the big selling points to go to Chicago University. She would drop out of his class because he was a fascist. He was too right leaning for the brainwashing that she was absorbing from school, from her ASU club, from her father. And basically, she was becoming a communist, right? Hey, Peanut, what's going on? And Catherine would drive everyone around in her bros and her brother's big black Buick. Because he was also a communist, and he said, oh, I can't, an evil capitalism bought me this Buick. I can't drive it. Washington Post, baby. This is why it is the way it is. It's just hilarious. It's just hilarious. And Catherine would spend the summer out west in California, returning her roots with her father's side, the Jewish family. They had a big community there in California. And her ancestors, her relatives, family, friends, they were still very prevalent in the area, and started working at a local paper there, trying to probably get out from her father's wing, you know, and like any college person would do. Can't, you know, hit on her for that. But she would eventually rejoin the Post with her father. And within 6 months, she would marry a guy named Philip Graham, protege of a guy named Felix Frankfurter, and someone who would solidify the Washington Post with the Mockingbird Media. Ooh, I wrote that too. That wasn't out of the book there. I thought that was a good setup for the next chapter here. But Catherine met the Intel asset, and that's what we'll loosely call him that, because that's what he was, in 1939 in a fancy party for her sister. His name was Philip Graham, big New Dealer. He was a Supreme Court law clerk. And just like, again, it's so many similarities between then and today, just like the woke people of the day, the New Deal took a total backseat in 1939. Because when there's money to be made in a war, social rights that people tend to care about, they get thrown out the window, and it's war, baby, war. Again, just like Ukraine, what happened to BLM? Well, the Ukraine war, guys, we got to take a break. An evil Putler is destroying this totally innocent, not corrupt, not racist land. And we got to stop that, because we're the world police, guys. I don't know if you know that. So forget social rights. War. Let's go. Let's get your gun. We're going to war. I just say that because that's why I love this book. It's literally, I'm like reading 1930s and it's 2023. It's 2023. Philip, get this. He's a New Dealer, her husband, Philip Graham, who would really link the CIA with the Washington Post. Philip blamed after the Oxford Pledge, I'll never fight in a war. Oh, it's so fascist here. It's more terrible than the Bolshevik Revolution. He blamed the peace movement that was part of Catherine's group. That's why it wasn't enough. Americans weren't getting riled up to want to fight. They're so hypocritical. They've always been hypocrites, and nobody tells you this. Until now, the whole general public still believed the news, and this was in 1939. And already we're seeing the hypocrisy of the media pushing out, oh, let's love people, let's care about people. Get it? Let's go. We're going to war. We got to stop a fascist today. You know, because it really relates to what's going on in America. Oh, we're worried they're going to, you know, what? Come on. And I wanted to say something else here. Philip blamed the peace movement, didn't rile up Americans. History rhymes. I don't know. There's something else I wanted to add, but I'll think of it later, I'm sure. Catherine continued to get more responsibility at the Washington Post, grooming her to take over one day. Have to break those buying investments. Exactly, dude. You can't. They got lots of money tied up there, guys. All right. And it's an honest war. It's an honest war. And Philip knew that he was going to marry Catherine. He used the lamest, woke, weak beta male line. I hope you're okay with owning just two dresses because we are not taking any money from your capitalistic father. What a pussy, right? What a vagina. Come on, dude. What? You said that to your wife? I hope you're okay with just owning. So that's the Washington Post, a weak loser, right? Somebody that can't make money any other way. And Phil did realize, though, that no other son of the Meyer family wanted the paper, and Eugene might even pass it to him, to them. Phil, though, her husband was an Ivy Leaguer, but he came from, like, money, but his family struggled at certain points. He went to Harvard. He was selected by this Felix Frankfurter, who was to be his clerk on the Supreme Court. And Philip was in a group called the Frankfurters, all radical-leaning people who would gain positions of power, all New Dealers, all in FDR's, you know, outer circle or whatever. And again, just another example, FDR, the president that wrote, you know, I think Social Security is a good thing. It's you can't do it. You really should just take care of your parents if the best of your ability as a child. I will never send my wife's parents into a nursing home. I know what the nurses are like at the hospital. You definitely don't want to send them to a nursing home. I'm just going to tell you that now. My wife tells me stories and think, oh, they're nurses. They know what they're doing. They don't. My wife does. She's brilliant. She's an amazing nurse. But let me tell you guys, you sometimes it might be better just to let it go. Okay. I'm being serious. The stories I hear, but anyway, take over the paper, capitalistic. The Frankfurters. Okay. So he's a brilliant guy though. Philip Graham. He was the president of the Harvard Law Review, which basically means that he was the best lawyer in the class. And since Harvard Law was number one at the time, you can see how powerful of a position this was. It was like the local paper there. And other presidents of the Harvard Law Review are, again, like big names that we would recognize from history in their ever varying fields, you know, politicians, lawyers, probably generals, who knows. And so he was kind of like the king of the campus. Rules didn't apply, better than everybody, better than the rest. Just again, how the fake virtue signaling of the left is present today. And, you know, I'm an evil person because I won't post a black square on my social media, or I won't wear a shirt with Jacob Blake's name on it. You know, they're a better person because they say, no, don't make those jokes. They're too mean. Don't say he's acting like a girl. No. Oh my God. And that happened. And my wife is worse than me now. I've like created a monster. We were talking about the name of our son, and we were using stereotypical other culture names to her dad, and her dad's laughing. He's making jokes. And then her mom came in and said, that was not funny. That wasn't a funny joke. You can't do that. So again, I'm not saying this about him, but I'm just saying this is the actions that are normal on the left, but they would be the first ones to call the police should their home be broken into, right? But so you can see why this post has always had the Washington Post has this sense of superiority, and how anyone that's conservative must be dumb, a redneck, a hick. It's from this type of guy, Philip Graham, I'm trying to empower the people, but I'm better than you. I have more political, I have more pull. So sorry, I'm better than you. But Frankfurter would be appointed to the Supreme Court in 1939. He got his fame for helping W.E.B. Du Bois organize the NAACP and the ACLU. So again, Phil's mentor was the guy that created the ACLU and the NAACP, which at one point were good organizations. I remember a story like the ACLU defended a white supremacist for free speech. They were actually doing good things. It was only within the last 10 years that they became weaponized and became this Marxist, you know, anti-white organization. And same with the NAACP. They did good things as well, but now not anymore. All these institutions have become so corrupted. Regardless, Catherine and Phil will get married in 1940. Man, they married quick. 1 year. It's crazy. And Phil, his dad was like roaming all around as a kid. They ended up in Florida growing sugar cane, which failed. Then they owned a dairy farm, which was successful. And Phil was Like he immediately when he before he got he had low grades at university, but his mom kept telling him like, "Oh, I want you to be a lawyer at Harvard." She dies, and he actually gets denied at first to get into Harvard. But his father's land holdings, he had connections with this senator, and he wrote Harvard and got him in. So in 1941, Phil stopped being a law clerk and started working on the Land Lease Administration. They discovered this statute in 1879 that enabled Teddy Roosevelt to lend and lease military equipment to the Allies before the U.S. entered the war. So obviously this is a workaround that we're going to prepare for war. Congress didn't say it's okay to declare war. We're going to lend them. We're just going to lend them these guns. We're going to lend them this land, right? Obviously, this is ridiculous, you know. Loopholes are there. That's why when people like a lot of the boomers are the like, Constitution, rah, rah, rah. Dude, the Constitution is only as good as the people that are in power. You couldn't write a document that would block out everything, all the workarounds, all the loopholes. I mean, look at all the stuff that goes on today that's not in the Constitution. So I always laugh when older people are like, my Constitution. Dude, this is what the Constitution does. Well, if people just followed the rules, they don't. They never do. They never do. That's what they do. Phil stopped. Oh, he just said that. So obviously, Phil's group was very influential on the presidency, and Phil was obsessed, like our Ukraine flaggers that we see everywhere on Twitter and when I'm driving. He was obsessed with fighting Mustache Man, totally obsessed. And war was now more important than any social reform, any and all social reforms. Phil had real power. He was writing notes to FDR about efficiency and supplies for the war. And Phil would help get $8 billion in government loans to defense factories. And again, I know I just keep repeating myself. Power to the people. All right, but before you do that, can you send that $8 billion to allow our military industrial complex to buy some guns to kill people? So just like his father-in-law had done in World War I with Bernard Baruch, her husband is doing the same thing. I'm sure it's just because that was a coincidence. Not like she married a guy that is a big warmonger, a neocon of today, right? I'm sure it's just a coincidence. But in 1941, U.S. joined the war and Phil was exempt because he had a government service. But being obsessed with Mustache Man that he was, just like our Ukrainian friends or our Americans that love to support Ukraine and keep saying, oh, how about like Donald Trump's, that CNN town hall when she asked him about Russia and Ukraine, who do you support in the war? And Trump had that great answer or whatever he said. And she interrupts him. Oh, that lady was insufferable. But she was like, well, so who do you support, Ukraine or Russia? Who do you want to win and lose? And it's like, again, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. But so anyway, he joins the Army Air Corps and he would eventually, because he's a weak beta soy boy, he gets injured in training camp, which removed his ability to quote, he kept saying, I want to see action. Ugh. So instead they sent him to Army Intelligence School in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Oh, so you're telling me that the husband of the owner or the owners of the Washington Post, the husband was at a military intelligence school? Oh, what was he learning there? I'm sure it was all good stuff, guys. Nothing to manipulate the public or propaganda. Oh, yeah. I always skeptic had a baller quote that he found for me. So let's read this one. The Constitution has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist. Lysander Spooner. Awesome quote. Not as good as C.S. Lewis's, but an awesome quote. No, I'm just joking. I've seen Spooner's name before. I don't know who he is, though. Friday, Brian, a rare... Oh, thank you, dude. Yes. Well, my wife, she took a new job, so she works weekends now, and it's a farther away hospital, but because it's a level 1 trauma, she loves that stuff. I don't know how she does it. I would get sick. Like, she had, like, a motorcycle guy. His head was open. You know, I think he lived too. She like took care of him and had like 12 different things being pumped into his body. I don't know how she does it, dude. I think when she has the baby, I will probably pass out because I don't do well with other people's pain. If someone's in pain, it makes me sick. I fast forward on shows. Can't do it. So I don't know how I'm going to do it when she's screaming with pushing that little monster out there. But yeah, I don't know what got us. Oh, we were talking Friday night. So Phil, he gets sent to military intelligence school, and his instructor was a guy, James Wiggins. I bring this up because James Wiggins was what? A newspaper editor. Oh my God. A newspaper editor is an instructor in a military intelligence school. What a weird career choice, right? Neither relate to the other at all. And he knew the Meyer family. Oh, imagine that. Seems like a lot of newspaper people are directly connected to the press and to each other. Probably just a coincidence there. Sure, they're not related. And Phil, he would complete his training, and he was assigned to Air Intelligence Staff in the Pacific under MacArthur. Basically, he helped provide huge info to MacArthur on how to take down the Japanese and remove them from the Philippines. His ideas or whatever, there's quotes about this as the greatest naval engagement of all time. I mean, it was a wipeout. I think like Japan lost like 20 ships. Like they lost it all because of Philip Graham, or, you know, he played a role in that. And that, so you see again, so now he's built these connections for life. So when he takes over the paper, as he gets home from war, he knows everybody who's anybody. So your buddy who's the vice president, who's a senator, they say, can you write an article? You know, you support them, right? And when they share your beliefs, you support them. You're going to write everything out of that lens of that you're right, they're wrong. And I don't need to explain this to you, but so you can see how the Washington Post would become the CIA's paper. The husband already was connected with all the CIA guys. The CIA wasn't started yet, it was the OSS. But he was connected to them all. And her father was connected to all the bankers. So how could the Washington Post have turned any differently? It couldn't. It almost looks like it was built to be this vehicle for the CIA, for international banking, for Zionism, to put out information that puts them in a good light and puts everyone else in an evil light. Phil would receive the Legion of Merit, the fifth highest reward, but those pesky injuries kept him out of seeing real action. But he was great for intelligence work inside the Pentagon. Catherine would be pregnant and the baby was born in 1944 while Phil was on base overseas. Phil would be in Japan as the U.S. wrote up the new Japanese constitution. He always seemed to be in the middle of some of the biggest events during the war. That was the quote from the book. And again, the book is writes these people in positive lights. So I found that quote interesting, that he was always around the biggest events during the war. Huh. I'm sure again, this is not going to at all foreshadow, relate to the CIA connection with the Washington Post later on. During the war, Meyer would help. This was huge, too. So during the war, Eugene Meyer, Catherine's father, would help the Dreyfus family and other families escape the Nazis. We talked about this the first episode. The Dreyfus Affair was an event in France that happened 40 years before the war, where a Jewish general, Dreyfus, was caught passing secret information to the Prussians from France. He would be cleared, according to history, who writes history, like 50 years after the event. So, you know, whatever you want to believe, I would tend to think a general, unless he's doing something very unlikable, they're not just going to make up a story that he's passing secret intelligence to the enemy they're fighting in the Franco-Prussian War. You know, why would they, if you were not doing that, why would your country, you're a general, you're a powerful person, you're needed, you are a key person to win this war. It's not normal to just make up an insane lie about that, right? So I found that interesting. But so Eugene Meyer, Catherine's father, was helping these people of this family escape the Nazis. Even though Meyer kept funding Zionism, when he bought the paper, he promised to keep it quote unquote neutral. And many fellow Jewish people were telling him to print about the camps in Europe. Meyer didn't believe them. Take that for what you will. And I don't know, you know, that's odd. That's weird. I can't believe that. But he kept getting his, like, these Jewish friends would come tell him, hey, you know, this is going on and not in Europe, and he didn't believe them. So he wouldn't print any of the stories. Him and his other wealthy friends would continue giving money to the Jewish agency. They had all these different underground avenues to help the new settlers of Palestine purchase weapons, medical supplies. Meyer was considered very loyal and a loyal American. He wrote to the Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, who classified this conversation because they're just friends. I classify conversations I have with my friends all the time. But in that conversation, it was eventually declassified. Meyer said, quote, "I would like if it seems that the Post can be helpful in a major way to make it so. I have in mind that we could do a campaign on military training, both in the news and the editorial department." So yet again, in 1940, whatever, Eugene Meyer is already working with the U.S. military and the military industrial complex to put out news that puts it in favorable light, that makes people, want to sign up for the war. Oh my God. Remember how I said, I forgot what I said. The reason why propaganda, why Phil, the husband, was mad that there wasn't, that these peace groups were screwing up the riling up of Americans to fight in the war. We often think that World War II is the, it's like the greatest generation, these brave young men, which they were extremely brave. Oh my God. 18-year-olds being shipped overseas. Amazing. The reason why they did that, though, not like my age, is because when you're 18, you have less fear of death. Your mortality isn't on the forefront of your mind. So how do you get people to charge a mountain that is covered with guns and storm a beach? Well, you get young kids and you rile them up. So Phil was upset about this. And but the point I was making was that more people, it was like one third of all fighters in World War II enlisted freely. They did it themselves as opposed to being drafted. In Vietnam, two thirds of all of the military, of the fight soldiers enlisted. So double the amount enlisted ratio wise, percentage wise for Vietnam than for World War II. But you saw because of propaganda or whatever, hippie movies, you think, no, most of America despised the war. LBJ was so gung-ho on the war. There was another Democrat, I forget who it was, he was anti-war, he wanted to pull out. He got crushed by LBJ, got crushed. So I think people now think of history like Vietnam, oh, everybody hated this. It was, no, nobody hated it. That was the issue. They all wanted to bomb the shit out of the Third World, send it back to the Stone Age, which they did. They dropped more bombs in Vietnam than they did in all of World War II on one country. Kissinger and Nixon, they're dropping bombs on Cambodia and Laos and all these places that have nothing to do with Vietnam. I mean, it was just a slaughter. It was just for both sides. But that's where we'll end the show today. So hopefully I built up you can see again in the last episode, we'll do the third one. It'll just be more about present time, Washington Post, how it got connected with the CIA, how these connections were officially established, or I guess unofficially established. The U.S. was doing pretty well up until the Tet Offensive. And skeptic, I would not know what the Tet Offensive was until I read my Operation Phoenix book. And just so you guys know, I'm skeptic, correct me if I'm wrong, the Tet Offensive, so there was fighting, blah, 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 lots of years of fighting, but they're the South, and there's a big holiday. I think it's like Tet is a shortened version of the word in Vietnam, but they had a holiday. So they said, let's have a 5-day peace treaty. And so both sides agree to it. The U.S. pulls people out or whatever. They're all, buying prostitutes that they bombed out of their homes years, months earlier, and January 1968. And the Viet Cong, they lied. Shocking. They lied. And they came with full force and they kicked that. I mean, we almost lost Vietnam during the Tet Offensive. It was brutal. The NVA actually failed in Tet because it was televised. It killed the drive for war back in the U.S. Fascinating. Thank you, skeptic. Damn. What's NVA, skeptic? North NVA. I don't know. We'll have to wait for him. But the third part of the episode will be just more recent times when Phil and Catherine are the true owners of the paper. Phil would eventually end up committing suicide in 1960, North Vietnam Army. Thank you. Both my two brilliant men, Phil and Skeptic. You guys are so good. So good. So yeah, so that is the show. We'll do part three next week. That's really it. So if you haven't followed at Kojak Podcast, like the sign says, thanks for all you guys listening on. We had 11 people, dude. It was so nice that you guys are here. And, you know, I know it's a Friday night, so thanks. So I'm Jack Allen. Please leave a review. Subscribe on Rumble. I'm going to be live streaming there, too, after this. I'll set that up. And thanks for listening, everybody. It makes me smile. So thanks. Thanks, guys. All right. Have a great night, everybody, and great weekend. Much love. God bless. Take care. Peace.